were in the deceptive folds and creases of the landscape. "I'm riding a damned Vergath, the nastiest weapon of war I've ever seen. I don't need a damned escort." All right, so it needed to be fed come evening. There was that to consider. "But I'm a man. I hate the need to consider anything. It's not a problem either, mostly." He preferred being just a corporal. This shield anvil business left a sour taste in his mouth. "Aye, there's a sentimental streak in me. I don't deny it. And maybe it's wide as an ocean, like Guest says. But I didn't ask for it. I cried for a dying mouse once. Dying because I tried to catch it, only my hand was too clumsy and something got broken inside. Lying there in my palm, breaths coming so fast, but the tiny limbs had stopped moving, and then the breath slowed. I knelt on the stones and watched it slowly die, there in my hand. Gods, it's enough to make me bawl all over again, just remembering. How old was I? 20? He leaned to one side and cleared his nose, one nostril and then the other. Then cleaned his moustache with his fingers, wiping them on his leg. Dust cloud any closer? Hard to say. Clearing a rise, he cursed and silently ordered his mount to a halt. The basin below stretched out 300 or more paces, and half that distance out, a dozen or so figures were standing or sitting in a rough circle. As soon as he came into view, the ones standing turned to face him, while the ones sitting slowly climbed upright and did the same. They were tall, gaunt, and armoured in black chain, black scales, and black leather. The Kell hunters had appeared suddenly to storm his right and left, and were closing up at a swift lope, their massive cutlasses held out to the sides. Stormy could taste something oily and bitter. "Calm down, lizards," he said under his breath, kicking the Vergath into motion. "They ain't drawing." Dark, narrow faces beneath ornate helms tracked Stormy's approach. Withered faces. "Those bastards are tusked. Jagged? Must be. That old bust of Gothos in Aran's great temple had tusks like those. But then, these fellows ain't looking too good. Tlan? Did the Jagged have Tlan? Oh, never mind these questions, idiot. Just ask 'em. Or not." 10 paces between them, Stormy reined in. The hunters halted a few paces back, settled and planted the tips of their cutlasses in the hard earth. He studied the warriors before him. "Ugly," he muttered. One spoke, though Stormy wasn't immediately certain from which one the voice came.
"Do you see this, Balerion?"
"I see," another answered.
"A human. Well, mostly human. Hard to tell behind all that hair. But let us be generous. A human with Kachain as pets. And only a few moments ago, Balerion, you had the nerve to suggest that the world was a better place than when we'd last left it."
"I did," Balerion admitted, and then added, "I was an idiot."
Low laughter. A third Jagged then said,
"Kachain and termites, Gedoran. Find one. And you know there's 100,000 more in the woodwork. As you say, Varandas."
"And with that other smell?"
"Just so," Gedoran said,
and Stormy found him by the nod accompanying the words.
"Dust. Dreams and nightmares, Gedoran, hide in the same pit. Reach down and you're blind to what you pull out."
They were all speaking Falari, which was ridiculous. Stormy snorted and then said,
"Listen, you're in my way."
Gedoran stepped forward.
"You did not come in search of us."
"Do I really look that stupid?" "No. Why, should I have?"
"He is impertinent."
"Darift, a human riding a Vergath can be as impertinent as he likes," said Balerion.
Hard laughter, heads rocking back. Stormy said,
"You're in the middle of nowhere. What are you up to?
Ah, said Gidoran. Now that is a pertinent query. We have sent our commander on a quest, and now await his return.
You order your commander around?
Yes, isn't that wonderful?
The Jaghut laughed again. A habit, Stormy decided as it went on, that could prove maddening.
Well, I'll leave you to it then.
The 14 Jaghut bowed, and Gidoran said,
Until we meet again, Shield Anvil.
I don't intend to ride back the way I came in. Wisdom is not yet dead, said Beleriand. Did I not suggest this to you all?
Amidst a host of idiotic assertions, perhaps you did.
Verandas, there must be a balance in the world. On one side, a morsel of weighty wisdom offsetting a gastric avalanche of brainless stupidity. Is that not the way of things?
But Beleriand, a drop of perfume cannot defeat a heap of shit.
That depends, Verandas, on where you put your nose.
Gidoran said,
Be sure to inform us, Verandas, when you finally smell something sweet.
Don't hold your breath, Gidoran.
To Rorka's laughter, Stormy kicked the Vergath into motion, steering the creature to the left to ride round the Jaghut. Once past, he urged his mount into a loping trot. A short while later, the Kell hunters drew in closer. He could smell their unease.
Aye,
he muttered. He wondered who the commander was.
Must be a damned idiot. But then, anything to escape that laughing. Aye, now that makes sense. Why, I'd probably ride straight up Hood's arsehole to get away from that lot. And as soon as I smell something sweet, boys and girls, why, I'll ride straight back and tell you.
That dust cloud looked closer, maybe. Chapter 7 Awaiting Restitution. Epigraph on Gravestone. Lether.
Is it as I see? Bryce Bedict asked. The fate of the world in the hands of three women?
Atreseda Erenict drew one more time on the stick and then flicked the stub into the fire.
Into flames.
She held the smoke in her lungs as long as she could, as if in refusing to breathe out she could hold back time itself.
I saw caverns, I saw darkness, and the rain, gods below, the rain.
Finally she sighed. If there was any smoke left, she didn't see it.
Not three women alone, she said. There is one man, you.
They sat undisturbed before the fire. Soldiers slept. The bawling of animals awaiting slaughter had died down for the night. Cook fires dwindled as the swirling wind ate the last dung, and the air was filled with ashes. Come the dawn,
we leave. Broken apart, each our separate ways. Could I have imagined this? Did she know? She must have. By her sword, we are shattered.
It was necessary, said Bryce.
You sound as if you are trying to convince yourself, she observed, drawing a taper from her belt sheath and reaching to set one end into the flames,
watched as it caught, brought the lurid fire closer to her face to light yet another stick.
I understood her, I think,
he grunted. Well, as much as anyone could. She nodded.
The look on the faces of her officers.
Stunned, yes. She thought of Fist Blistig.
Appalled.
He glanced across at her.
I worried for you, my love. A Brastal's daughter.
A potent child indeed, to find us from so far away.
She pulled on the stick.
I was unprepared. The visions made no sense. They overwhelmed me.
Are you able to make sense of them now?
No.
Will you describe them to me, Erenict?
She dropped her gaze.
Forgive me for asking, he said. I did not think... You should not have to relive such trauma. Ah, I am tired and tomorrow will be a long day.
She heard the invitation in his words, but the flames of the hearth held her in place.
Something, a promise, a warning, I need to think on this. I will join you, love, soon.
Of course. If you find me dead to the world... She flinched, recovered, and said,
I shall be careful not to wake you.
He leaned close, and she turned to meet his lips with hers, saw the tenderness of his smile as he pulled away. Then she was alone, and her gaze returned again to the flames.
A parley, a meeting of minds. Well...
It had begun simply enough. Regal riders reining before the command tent, soldiers appearing to take the horses. Greetings exchanged with the Malazan officers awaiting these distinguished guests. The adjunct was within, yes. Her wounds? She has recovered, thankfully. We're afraid there will be little formality in all this, Highness. Is it not best that we each make our own introductions? Mortal Sword, Shield Anvil, it is good to see you both. Fist Faradan's sort had held to her own standard of formality, Aranicht supposed, both comfortable and respectful, whereas Fist's kindly and Blistig had said nothing, the tension between the two men palpable. She'd stood close to Commander Bryce. It was difficult to know where to look. The Khandril women, Hanavat and Shelamasa, held back from the others, as if uncertain of their own worth. As words were exchanged between Sort and Krughava and Abrastel on the matter of who should enter first, a clash of deference of all things, Aranicht edged back a step and made her way over to the Khandril. They observed her approach with evident trepidation. Aranicht stopped, drew out her pouch and counted out 3 sticks of rust leaf. She held them up with brows raised. Sudden smiles answered her. She stood and smoked with them, a few paces back from all the others, and Aranicht caught Bryce's eye and was pleased by the pride she saw in her lover's regard. It was finally determined that Queen Abrastel would be the first to enter, accompanied by the Bargast war chief Spax, followed by the Perish. When faces turned to the Khandril women, Hanavat gestured with one hand. Clearly, now that she had something to do, she was content to wait. Shelamasa seemed even more relieved. Bryce approached.
Atri Seda Aranicht, if you please, would you escort the Khandril inside once you are, done here?
Of course, she replied. It will be my pleasure.
Moments later, the 3 women were alone, apart from the 2 soldiers flanking the tent's entrance. Hanavat was the first to speak.
I am tempted to go back to my people. I do not belong in such company.
You stand in your husband's stead, said Aranicht.
She grimaced.
It is not what I would choose. No one is blind to that, Aranicht said as gently as she could. But if you like, I can invent an excuse.
No,
Hanavat said.
Even my husband struggled in this particular duty. The burned tears are sworn to the field of battle in the memory of Coltane of the Crow Clan.
She released a harsh stream of smoke.
But it seems failure finds us no matter where we turn.
She nodded to the tent.
I will stand before their disappointment since my husband dares not. My midwives tell me again and again that a woman's spirit is stronger than a man's. This day I mean to prove it. If you like, I shall introduce you, Hanavat. I expect no such formalities, Atri Seda. The adjunct has more important matters to attend to in there.
My head is spinning, said Shelamasa.
It passes, said Aranicht.
A short time later they were done. Hanavat gestured for Aranicht to precede them. The Atri Seda turned to the tent entrance, but then Hanavat said,
Aranicht, yes, thank you. My commander spoke from the heart with the words he gave you earlier, Hanavat. The Khandril have nothing to be ashamed of. Indeed, the very opposite is true.
She led them into the command tent. In the outer chamber were the 2 Malazan captains, Raband and Scannero. Muted voices came from the other side of the curtain. Scannero gave them all a strained smile.
We decided we didn't want to crowd the room.
When Shelamasa hesitated, Hanavat took the younger woman by the arm. Aranicht drew the entrance curtain to one side. The Khandril women entered the chamber. Conversation fell away. As Aranicht stepped in, she sensed the tension.
Mortal Sword Krughava's face was dark with anger, or shame. A pace behind her was the shield anvil, pale, clearly rattled. Bryce stood to the right, his back almost brushing the curtain wall. Alarm was writ plain on his face. To the left stood the queen, taut and watchful as her sharp eyes tracked from Krughava to the adjunct and back again. Who had just been speaking? Arenicht wasn't sure. The fist stood to the adjunct's left, close to the corner of the chamber. Banaskar leaned against a support pole on the other side, his arms crossed and his eyelids half lowered. Close by, as if ready to catch the ex-priest should he collapse, was Lastara Yil. Adjunct Tavare looked hale, her expression severe, holding Krughava's glare unflinchingly. Upon the arrival of the Khandril, Fist Faridan's sword cleared her throat and said,
"Adjunct, it pleases me to introduce..."
"No need," Tavare replied, setting her regard upon Shalamasa. The adjunct stepped forward, forcing apart the mortal sword and the queen. "I assume you are Shalamasa, who succeeded in rallying the survivors of the charge, guiding the retreat and so saving many lives. It is said you were the last to leave the field. Your presence here honors us all." She paused and then turned to Hanavat. "Precious mother," she said, "I grieve for your terrible losses. It grieves me too that, in this time, your husband dwells only upon his own losses. It is my hope that he soon awakens to the gifts remaining in his life." Tavare looked at the others. "Hanavat and Shalamasa are Khandril burned tears, our longest-standing allies. Their sacrifice on the day of the Naruk saved the lives of thousands. On this day, as upon every other, I value their counsel. Fist kindly, find a chair for Hanavat. It is not proper that she stand with her child so near." Arenicht saw Hanavat fighting back tears, welling up behind her astonishment, as if the two women now stood taller than they had a moment earlier.
"Adjunct Tavare, you continue to surprise us."
Tavare returned to her original position. "The bone hunters," she said, "have had enough time to lick their wounds. Now we must march in earnest." Krughava's voice was harsh with suppressed emotion.
"We are sworn to serve me,"
the adjunct snapped.
"You have sworn to serve me, and that I need to remind you of this pains me, mortal sword."
"You do not," Krughava said in a tone like honed iron. "Your army is damaged, adjunct. We stand before you, all of us here, and would pledge ourselves to your cause."
"Not quite," cut in Queen Abrustal, "since I don't yet understand that cause, and by the look on the face of Prince Bryce, I suspect he shares my unease."
Krughava hissed a curse in her own language, and then tried again.
"Adjunct, now is the time to coalesce our respective forces, thus bolstering our strength."
"No."
The words struck like a knife driven into the floor between them. The color left Krughava's face.
"If you doubt our loyalty or courage..."
"I do not,"
Tavare replied.
"In fact, I am depending on it." "But this makes no sense."
The adjunct turned to Abrastel.
"Highness, your presence here is most unexpected, but welcome. Your kingdom, even more than that of King Tehal, has had long-term contact with those territories of Kolantz and the south kingdoms of the Palacia Sea."
"That is true, adjunct. What can you tell us of the situation there?"
The queen's brows lifted.
"I assumed you were entirely aware of where you are headed, adjunct. If that is not the case, then I am baffled. What manner of war do you seek? What is the cause for this belligerence of yours?"
It seemed that Tavare was unwilling to answer. Silence stretched. The one who finally spoke startled them all.
"The worm will feed."
Banaskar slowly lifted his head.
"She will gorge on the slaughter to come."
His bleary gaze wandered among them, settled on the Balkando queen.
"What are you worth, any of you?
He nodded to the adjunct.
She thinks enough. Enough worse to fight an impossible war. For you, Highness, and you, Prince Bryce, and...
He faltered for a moment, as if about to be sick.
Even me.
I don't understand, said Abrustle, but I will let the matter rest for now. To answer you, adjunct, I must weave a tale. And, she added, my throat grows parched.
Sort walked to the curtain entrance, leaned out and ordered her captains to find some ale. The queen snorted and then said,
Well, I suppose ale better suits a story told than does wine. Very well, I shall begin. They came from the sea. Isn't that always the way? No matter. There was trouble in the lands long before that day, however. Decades of drought, uprisings, civil wars, usurpations, a host of once wealthy nations now verging on utter collapse. In such times, prophets are known to rise. Bold revolutions, the heads of kings and queens on spear points, blood in the streets. But against a sky empty of rain, no cause triumphs. No great leader from the masses can offer salvation, and before long even their heads adorn spikes.
Sort arrived with a cask of ale and a dozen or so tin cups. She set about serving drinks, beginning with the queen. Abrastel swallowed down a quick mouthful, sighed, and resumed.
One can imagine how it must have felt. The world was ending. Civilization itself had failed, revealing its terrible fragilities. That clutter of thin sticks holding it all upright. In place of rain, despair settled upon the lands. In Colance, only the province of Estobance thrived. Fed by glacial streams and rivers, sheltered from the hot winds of the south, by this one province all of Colance struggled on. But there were too many mouths to feed, and the strain was taking its toll. If there was a solution to this strait, it was too cruel to contemplate. The strangers from the sea had no such qualms, and when they cast down the rulers of Colance, they did what they deemed necessary.
A cull, said the adjunct, and that word seemed to take the life from Tavare's eyes. Abrastel regarded Tavare a moment over the rim of her cup, drank, and then nodded.
Just so. In the first year, they reduced the population of Colance by 50%. The least fit, the elderly, the sickly. Another 10% the next year. And then, with more of their own kind coming in great ships, they sent armies into the South Kingdoms. Adjudication, they called it. They titled themselves Inquisitors. In their hands they held the justice of the land itself, and that justice proved harsh indeed.
Abrastel hesitated and then shrugged.
That was pretty much the end of our trade with the East. As we are people of the land, not the sea, we sent out merchant caravans along the old south routes, but those few that returned told tales of nothing but desolation. The merchant ships we then hired ventured into the Palacia Sea and found silted-in ports and abandoned cities all along the coasts. They could find no one left with whom to trade.
Did they travel onward to Colance? Tavare asked.
Only the first few, with reason. The Inquisitors did not welcome visitors.
She drained her cup and held it out for a refill.
We considered war, adjunct. Though the ships were not our own, we'd given them royal charter, and we were most displeased by the slaughter of innocents.
She glanced over at her Bargast war chief.
We even hired ourselves a mercenary army.
Yet you declared no war, observed Bryce.
No. I sent an agent, my 11th daughter. She did not survive, yet was able to send me a message. These inquisitors were not human at all.
Justice, said Banaskar, pulling a small jug from his cloak. The sweet contradiction they took to, like...
He regarded the jug. Like wine. There is no true justice, they will say, without the most basic right that is retribution. Exploit the world at your peril, dear friends. One day someone will decide to speak for that world. One day someone will come calling. He snorted. But Fokrul Asael? Gods below, even the Leosan would have done better.
He tilted the jug back, drank, and then sighed.
There were temples to Derek once, in Kalance.
He grinned at Tavaray.
Woe to all a priest's confessions, eh, adjunct?
Not human, repeated Abrastel. Their power was unassailable, and it seemed to be growing. We declared no war.
And she looked up into the adjunct's eyes. But here we are. Adjunct Tavaray faced Bryce Bedict.
Prince, I have not had the opportunity to thank you for your intervention on the day of the Naruk. That the Bone Hunters still exist is due to your bravery and that of your soldiers. Without you and the Kundril, we would never have extricated ourselves from that engagement.
I fear, Adjunct, said Bryce, that we were not enough. And I'm sure War Leader Gaul, and indeed Hanavat here, feel the same. Your army is hurt. The stand by the heavy infantry and the marines took from you the very soldiers you need the most.
He glanced at Krughava briefly, and then continued.
Adjunct, I share the mortal sword's dismay at what you now propose.
The Bone Hunters, said Tavaray, will march alone.
Do you say, then, Bryce asked, that you have no further need of us?
No, my need for you has never been greater.
Queen Abrastel held out her cup, and as Sort refilled it, she said,
Then you have misled me, adjunct. Clearly you know more of the enemy, these Fokrul Asael, and their aims than do any of us.
Or, she corrected,
you think you do. I would point out that the Inquisitors no longer appear to hold to expansionist intentions. The errant knows they've had enough time to prove otherwise.
Banaskar's laugh was soft yet grating.
The Bone Hunters march alone, leaking blood with every step. Fists, captains, and cooks all ask the same thing. What does she know? How does she know it? Who speaks to this hard woman with the flat eyes, this Utataral sword stolen from the Empress's scabbard? Was it Quick Ben, our mysterious high mage who no longer walks with us? Was it Fist Keneb? Or perhaps the Empress is not the mistress of betrayal as we all believe, and the Empire's high mage Teshren now creeps in step with us, a shadow no one casts.
He toasted with his jug.
Or has she simply gone mad? But no, none of us think so, do we? She knows something. But what? And how?
He drank, weaved a moment as if about to fall, then steadied himself before Lostara Yil reached him. Noticing her, he offered the woman a loose smile.
Or is the ex-priest whispering in her ear?
The question was asked by Fist Blistig, his tone strained and cold. Banaskar's brows lifted.
The last priest of the wreck has no time for whispering, my dear boneless Fist Blistig.
The fist grunted an oath and would have stepped forward if kindly had not edged deftly into his path. Smiling, Banaskar went on.
All the chewing deafens him, anyway. Gnawing on all sides. The dog has wounds. Don't touch.
He waved with his jug in the adjunct's direction.
The Bone Hunters march alone. Oh, yes. More alone than anyone could imagine. But look to Tavaray now. Look carefully, friends.
This solitude she insists upon, why, it's not complicated at all. Are you not all commanders? Friends, this is simple. It's called tactics.
Arenicht looked to Bryce in the odd silence that followed, and she saw the glint of something awaken in his eyes, as if an unknown language had suddenly become comprehensible.
Adjunct, he said, against the Lether Empire, you struck both overland and by sea. We reeled from one direction and then another.
You say you need us more than ever, said Mortal Sword Krughava then, because we are to invade on more than one front.
Adjunct?
Directly east of us waits the Glass Desert, Tavare said. While it offers the shortest route into the territories of the Forkrul Asael, this path is not only reputedly treacherous, but by all accounts impossible for an army to traverse.
She studied the Perish.
That is the path the Bone Hunters will take. Mortal Sword, you cannot accompany us, because we cannot feed you, nor supply you with water. Beyond the Glass Desert, by Queen Abrastel's own account, the land scarcely improves.
A moment, please.
The Balkando Queen was staring at the adjunct.
The only viable overland routes are the southern caravan tracks. The Glass Desert is truly impassable. If you take your army into it, you will destroy what's left of the Bone Hunters. Not one of you will emerge.
We shall cross the Glass Desert, said the adjunct, emerging to the southwest of Esteban's province. And we mean to be seen by the enemy at the earliest opportunity. And they shall gather their forces to meet us, and a battle shall be fought. One battle.
Something in Tavare's tone made Arenicht gasp, and she felt herself grow cold with horror.
What of the Grey Helms? Krughava demanded.
In the Bay of Colantz, there rises a natural edifice known as the Spire. Atop this fastness, there is a temple. Within this temple, something is trapped. Something wounded, something that needs to be freed. The Bone Hunters shall be the lodestone to the forces of the Forkrul Asael, Mortal Sword. But it is the Perish who will strike the death blow against the enemy.
Arenicht saw Krughava's iron eyes narrowing.
We are to take the south route.
Yes. A battle. One battle. She means to sacrifice herself and her soldiers. Oh, by all the holds, she cannot.
You invite mutiny,
said Fist Blistig, his face flushed dark.
Tavare, you cannot ask this of us.
And she faced her fists then and said in a whisper,
but I must.
Unwitnessed, said Faradan Sort, ghost pale, dry-lipped. Adjunct, this battle you seek. If we face an enemy believing only in our own deaths.
Banaskar spoke, and Arenicht was shocked to see tears streaming down his cheeks.
To the executioner's axe, there are those who kneel, head bowed, and await their fate. Then there are those who fight, who strain, who cry out their defiance even as the blade descends.
He pointed a finger at Blistig.
Now you will speak true, Fist. Which one is Adjunct Tavare? A drunken fool speaks for our commander.
Blistig's voice was vicious. He bared his teeth.
How damned appropriate! Will you stand there with us on that day, Banaskar? I shall. Drunk!
The word was a sneer. The man's answering smile was terrible.
No. Stone sober, Blistig. As befits your one, your only witness. Who'd take your damned executioner? I will have none of this!
Blistig appealed to his fellow fists.
Knowing what you now know, will you lead your soldiers to their deaths? If this Glass Desert doesn't kill us, the Asael will. And all for what? A feint? A fucking feint?
He spun to the adjunct.
Is that all we're worth, woman? A rusty dagger for one last thrust, and if the blade snaps, what of it?
Krughava spoke. Adjunct Tavore, this thing that is wounded, this thing in the temple upon the spire, what is it that you wish freed?
The heart of the crippled god, Tavore replied. The mortal sword seemed visibly rocked by that. Behind her, with eyes shining, Tanakalian asked, Why?
The Fokral Asael draw upon its blood, Shield Anvil. They seek to open the gates of justice upon this world, Akrast Korvalain. To unleash the fullest measure of power, they intend to drive a blade through that heart when the time is right.
And when is that? Abrastol demanded.
When the spears of jade arrive, Highness, less than 3 months from now, if Banaskar's calculations are correct, the ex-priest grunted.
The wreck is coiled about time itself, friends.
Clearing his throat, Bryce asked, The jade spears, adjunct, what are they?
The souls of his worshippers, Prince, his beloved believers, they are coming for their god.
Chills tracked Aranik's spine.
If the heart is freed, said Krughava, then he can return to them.
Yes.
He will leave pieces behind no matter what, said Banaskar. Pulling him down tore him apart. But there should be enough. As for the rest, well, for the rotted flesh, the worm sings.
His laugh was bitter. He stared at Tavore.
See her? Look well, all of you. She is the madness of ambition, friends. From beneath the hands of the Fokral Asael and those of the gods themselves, she means to steal the crippled god's heart.
Queen Abrastel gusted out a breath.
My 14th daughter is even now approaching the South Kingdoms. She is a sorceress of considerable talent. If we are to continue this discussion of tactics, I will seek to open a path to her.
The adjunct cut in.
Highness, this is not your war. Forgive me, adjunct Tavore, but I believe it is.
She turned to her Bargast war chief.
Spax? Your warriors hunger for a scrap. What say you?
Well, your lead, Highness. The white-faced Gilk shall follow.
The Ototeral sword I wear. Forgive me again, adjunct, but the power my daughter is drawing upon now happens to be elder, Omtos Felak.
Tavore blinked. I see. Bryce Bedict then spoke.
Mortal sword, Krughava. If you will accept the alliance of Queen Abrastel, will you accept mine?
The grey-haired woman bowed.
Prince and Highness, the parish are honored, but,
she hesitated, then continued,
I must tell you all, I shall be harsh company. Knowing what the bone hunters face, knowing that they will face it alone, as wounded as the very heart they would see freed. Ah, my mood is grim indeed, and I do not expect that to change. When at last I strike for the spire, you will be hard-pressed to match my determination.
Bryce smiled.
A worthy challenge, mortal sword.
The adjunct walked to stand once more before Hanavat.
Mother, she said, I would ask this of you. Will the Kundril march with the bone hunters?
Hanavat seemed to struggle finding her voice.
Adjunct, we are few. Nonetheless, then, yes, we shall march with you.
Queen Abrastel asked,
Adjunct, shall I call upon Falash, my 14th daughter? There are matters of tactics and logistics awaiting us this day. By your leave,
I am done with this,
Blistig shouted, turning to leave.
Stand where you are, fist.
Tavaray said in a voice like bad steel.
I resign! I forbid it!
He stared at her, mouth open in shock.
Fist Blistig, Kindly and Faradan Sort, our companies need to be readied for tomorrow's march. I shall call upon you all at dusk to hear reports of our status. Until then, you are dismissed.
Kindly grasped Blistig by one arm and marched him out, Sort following with a wry smile.
Omtos Falak,
muttered Banaskar once they'd left.
Adjunct, I was chilled enough the last time. Will you excuse me?
Tavaray nodded. Captain Yil, please escort our priest to his tent, lest he get lost. She then shot Aranek a glance, as if to ask, Are you ready for this? To which Aranek nodded. Abrastel sighed.
Very well. Shall we begin?
Aranek saw that the dung had burned down to dull ashes. She flicked away the gutted butt of her last stick and then stood, lifting her gaze to the spears of jade.
We'll do what we can. Today we promised as much. What we can. One battle. Oh, Tavaray.
Sick and shaken as she had been, her hardest journey this day had been back through the Bonehunter camp. The soldiers, their faces, the low conversations and the occasional laugh, each and every scene, each and every sound, struck her heart like a dagger's point.
I am looking upon dead men, dead women. They don't know it yet. They don't know what's awaiting them, what she means to do with them. Or maybe they do. Unwitnessed. I've heard about this, about what she told them. Unwitnessed is what happens when nobody survives.
He'd intended to call them all together during the adjunct's parley, but reforming the squads had taken longer than he'd thought it would, a notion which, he decided, had been foolishly optimistic. Even with spaces in each campfire's circle yawning like silent howls, marines and heavies might as well have been rooted to the ground. They'd needed pulling, kicking, dragging out of their old places. To fit into a new thing, you had to leave the old thing behind. And that wasn't as easy as it sounded, since it meant accepting that the old thing was dead, forever gone, no matter where you tried standing or how stubbornly you held fast. Fiddler knew he'd been no different. As bad as Hedge in that regard, in fact. The heavies and the marines were a chewed-up mess, standing over them like some cutter above a mauled patient, trying to work out exactly what he was looking at, desperate for something even remotely recognizable, he'd watched them trickle slowly into the basin he'd chosen for this meeting. As the sun waned in the sky, as pairs of squad mates set out to find some missing comrade, eventually returning with a scowling companion in tow, aye, this was a rough scene, resentment thickening in the dusty air. He'd waited, weathering their impatience, until at last, with dusk fast rushing in, the final recalcitrant soldier walked into the crowd. Korik. Well, you can try all the browbeating you want. When the skull's turned into a solid stone wall, there's no getting in. So, Fiddler said, I'm captain to you lot now. He stared at the faces, only half of which seemed to be paying him any attention. If Whiskey Jack could see me right now, he'd probably choke. I was never cut out for anything more than what I was in the beginning, a sapper.
So what is it? A voice called out. You want us to feel sorry for you?
No, Gaunt Eye. With you all feeling so sorry for yourselves, I wouldn't stand a chance, would I? I look out at you now, and you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, you ain't bridge burners. You ain't even close.
Even the gloom wasn't enough to hide the hard hostility fixed on him now.
Aye, he said. You see, it was back in Black Dog that it finally clunked home that we were the walking dead. Someone wanted us in the ground, and damn if we didn't mostly end up there. in the tunnels of Pale, the tombs of the Bridgeburners, tombs they dug for themselves. Heard a few stragglers hung on until Black Coral, and those bodies ended up in Moonspawn the day it was abandoned by the Tistandi. An end to the tale, but like I said, we saw that end coming from a long way off.
He fell silent then, momentarily lost in his own memories, the million losses that added up to what he felt now. Then he shook himself and looked up once more.
But you lot, he shook his head, you're too stupid to know what's been beating you on the heads ever since Yagatan. Wide-eyed stupid,
Cuttle spoke up.
We're the walking dead. Thanks for the good news, Fed,
someone said, his voice muffled. A few laughs, but they were bitter. Fiddler continued.
Those lizards took a nasty bite out of us. In fact, they pretty much did us in. Look around. We're what's left. The smoke over Pale's thinning, and here we are. Aye, it's my past pulling me right round till I'm facing the wrong way. You think you feel like shit? Try standing in my boots, boys and girls. Thought we were going to decide what to do.
Fiddler found Gaunt-Eye in the crowd.
Is that what you thought, Sergeant? Is that really what you thought we'd be doing here? What, we gonna vote on something? We gonna stick up our little hands after arguing ourselves blue? After digging our little holes and crouching in them like mummy's womb? Tell me, Sergeant, exactly what have we got to argue about?
Pulling out.
Someone rustle up a burial detail. We got us a sergeant to plant. You called this damn meeting, Captain. Aye, I did. But not to hold hands. The adjunct wants something special from us. Once we get t'other side of the glass desert. And here I am letting you know we're going to be our own little army. Nobody wanders off, is that understood? On the march, you all stay tight. Keep your weapons, keep sharp, and wait for my word.
You call this an army, Captain?
It'll have to do, won't it?
So what is it we're supposed to do?
You'll find out, I'm sure. A few more laughs.
More lizards waiting for us, Captain?
No, Relico, we took care of them already, remember?
Damn me, I missed something.
No lizards, Fiddler said. Something even uglier and nastier, in fact.
All right then, said Relico. S'long as it's not lizards.
Hold on, said Corporal Rib. Captain, you had us sitting here all afternoon, just to tell us that. Not my fault we had stragglers, Corporal. I need some lessons from Sort, or maybe Kindly. A captain orders, soldiers obey. At least it's supposed to work that way. But then you're all different now. Special cases, right? You'll follow an order only if you feel like it. You earned that, or something. How? By living when your buddies died. Why'd they die? Right. They were following orders, whether they liked them or not. Fancy that. Deciding whether or not to show up here. What was that? Must have been honoring your fallen comrades, I suppose. The ones who died in your place.
Maybe we're broken. Again, that voice he couldn't quite place. Fiddler scratched his beard and shook his head.
You're not broken. The walking dead don't break. Still waiting for that to clunk home, are you? We're going to be the adjunct's little army, but too little. Anyone can see that. Now, it's not that she wants us dead. She doesn't. In fact, it might even be that she's trying to save our lives. After all, where's she taking the regulars? Chances are, wherever that is, you don't want to be there. So maybe she thinks we've earned a break, or maybe not. Who knows what the adjunct thinks about anything? She wants what's left of the heavies and the marines in one company. Simple enough.
You know more than you're saying, Fiddler.
Do I, Corrick?
Aye, you've got the deck of dragons.
What I know is this. Next time I give you all an order, I don't expect to have to wait all day to see you follow it. Next soldier tries that with me gets tossed to the regulars, out of the special club for good.
We dismissed, Captain?
I ain't decided yet. In fact, I'm tempted to make you sit here all night, just to make a point, right? The one about discipline, the one your friends died for.
We took that point the first time, Captain. Maybe you did, Cuttle.
Ready to say the same for the rest of them?
No.
Fiddler sat down on a boulder at the edge of the basin and settled until he was comfortable. He looked into the night sky.
Ain't that jade light pretty?
Things were simple, really. There's only so much a soldier can do, only so much a soldier needs to think about at any one time. Pile on too much and their knees start shaking, their eyes glaze over, and they start looking around for something to kill.
Because killing simplifies. It's called an elimination of distractions.
Her horse was content, watered and fed enough to send the occasional stream down and plant an island or two in their wake. Happy horse, happy Masangilani.
Simple.
Her companions were once more nowhere to be seen. Sour company, besides. She hardly missed them. And she herself wasn't feeling as saggy and slack as she'd been only a day earlier. Who knew where the Talani Mas had found the smoked antelope meat, the tanned bladders filled to bursting with clean cold water, the loaves of hard bread and the rancid jar of buttery cheese? Probably the same place as the forage for her horse.
And wherever that was, it was 100 leagues away from here.
Oh, speak it plain, Masan. It was through some infernal warren.
I seen them fall into dust. But maybe that's not what it seems. Maybe they just step into another place. Somewhere nice, where at the point of a stone sword, farmers hand over victuals and a beaming smile and good hail to you all.
Dusk was darkening the sky. She'd have to stop soon. They must have heard her coming, for the two men stood waiting at the far end of the slope, staring up at her the instant she'd cleared the rise. Masan reined in, squinted for a moment, and then nudged her mount forward.
"You're not all that's left," she said as she drew nearer. "You can't be."
Captain Ruthan Gad shook his head.
"We're not far from them. A league or two, I'd wager."
"We'd thought to just push on," added Bottle. "Do you know how bad it was?"
"Not yet," said the captain, eyeing her horse. "That beast looks too fit, Masangilani."
"No such thing," she replied, dismounting, "as a too fit horse, sir."
He made a face.
"Meaning you're not going to explain yourself?"
"Didn't you desert?" Bottle asked. "If you did, Masan, you're riding the wrong way, unless you're happy with being strung up."
"She didn't desert," Ruthan Gad said, turning to resume walking. "Special mission for the adjunct."
"How do you know anything about it, sir?"
Masan asked, falling in step with the two men.
"I don't. I'm just guessing."
He combed at his beard.
"I have a talent for that."
"Has plenty of talents, does our captain here," Bottle muttered.
Whatever was going on between these two, she had to admit to herself that she was happy to see them.
"So how did you two get separated from the army?" she asked. "By the way, you both look a mess. Bottle, you bathe in blood or something? I barely recognized you."
"You'd look the same," he retorted, "buried under 50 corpses for half a day." "Not quite that long," the captain corrected. Her breath caught.
"So you were at the battle," she said. "What battle? What in Hood's name happened?"
"Bits are missing," Bottle replied, shrugging.
"Bits?"
He seemed ready to say something, changed his mind, and instead said,
"I didn't quite catch it all, especially the, second half. But you know, Masan, all the stories about high attrition among officers in the Malazan military..."
He jerked a thumb at Ruthan Gad.
"It ain't so with him."
The captain said, "If you hear a certain resentment in his tone, it's because I saved his life.
And as for the smugness in the captain's tone..."
"Fine," she snapped. The adjunct sent me to find some people."
"Which you evidently failed to do," observed Bottle.
"No, she didn't," said Ruthen Gud.
"So all this crawling skin I'm feeling isn't fleas?"
Ruthen Gud bared his teeth in a hard grin.
"Well, no, it probably is, soldier. Frankly, I'd be surprised if you did feel something. Oh, I know, you're a mage. Fid's shaved knuckle, right? Even so, these bastards know how to hide."
"Let me guess, they're inside the horse. Isn't there some legend about..."
"The moral of which," Rudd interjected, "is consistently misapprehended. It's nothing to do with what you think it's to do with. The fact is, that tale's moral is don't trust horses. Sometimes people look way too hard into such things. Other times, of course, they don't look hard enough. But most of the time, by far, they don't look at all."
"If you want," said Masan Gilani, "I can ask them to show themselves."
"I've absolutely no interest in..."
"I do,"
Bottle cut him off.
"Your pardon, sir, for interrupting."
"An apology I'm not prepared to accept, soldier. As for these guests, Masan Gilani, your offer is categorically..."
Swirls of dust on all sides. Moments later, 5 Tlani Mas encircled them.
"Gods below,"
Ruthen Gud muttered. As one, the undead warriors bowed to the captain. One spoke.
"We greet you, Elder."
Gud's second curse was in a language Masan Gilani had never heard before.
"It's not what you think," he'd said with those hoary things bowing before him.
And he'd not said much else. The Tlani Mas vanished again a short time later, and the 3 soldiers continued on as the night deepened around them. Bottle wanted to scream. The captain's company over the past few days had been an exercise in patience and frustration. He wasn't a man for words.
"Ruthen Gud, or whatever your name really is, it's not what I think.
How do you know what I think?
Besides, it's exactly what I think.
Fid has his shaved knuckle, and it seems the adjunct has one too."
A hood-damned elder god. After all, what other kind of elder would Tlani Mas bow before? And since when did they bow before anything? Masan Gilani's barrage of questions had withered the Tlani Mas to dust, with, Bottle thought, a harried haste. But things from the past had a way of refusing illumination. As bad as standing stones, they held all their secrets buried deep inside. It wasn't even a question of irritating coyness. They just don't give a shit. Explanations? What's the point? Who cares what you think you need to know anyway? If I'm a stone, lean against me. If I'm a ruin, rest your weary arse on the rubble. And if I'm an elder god, well, abyss take you. Don't look to me for anything. But he'd ridden out against the Naruk when he could have ridden the other way. He went and made a stand, which made him what? Another one in mysterious service to Adjunct Tavare Paran of Unta?
But why? Even the Empress didn't want her in the end. Tambor, Quick Ben, even Fiddler, they stood with her even when it cost them their lives.
Soldiers muttered she didn't inspire a damned thing in them. Soldiers grumbled that she was no Dujek One Arm, no Coltane, no Crust, no Dasem Ultor. They didn't know what she was. None of us do, come to that.
But look at us, right here, right now, walking back to her. A Dalhanese horsewoman who can ride like the wind. Well, a heavy wind, then. An elder god, and me. Gods below, I've lost my mind.
Not quite. I tore it apart, only to have Quick Ben make sure most of it came back. Do I feel different? Am I changed? How would I even know? But I miss the bone hunters. I miss my miserable squad. I miss the damned adjunct. We're nothing but the sword in her hand. But we're a comfortable grip. Use us then.
Just do it in style. Camp Glow ahead, said Masangelani, who once more rode her horse. Looks damned big.
Her allies have arrived, said Ruthengard, then added, I expect.
Bottle snorted.
Does she know you're alive, Captain?
Why should she?
Well, because
I'm a captain soldier
who rode alone into the face of an Uruk legion, armored in ice, with a sword of ice, a horse.
Oh, enough, Bottle. You have no idea how much I regret doing what I did. It's nice not being noticed. Maybe one day you humans will finally understand that and do away with all your mad ambitions, your insipid, self-delusional megalomania. You weren't shut out by some god on high. You weren't painted in the flesh of the divine, at least not any more than anyone or anything else. What's with you all, anyway? You jam a stick up your own arse, then preen at how tall and straight you're standing. Soldier, you think you put your crawling days behind the day you left your mother's tit? Take it from me, you're still crawling, lad. Probably always will.
Bludgeoned by the tirade, Bottle was silent.
You too go on, said Masangelani. I need to piss.
That last time was the horse, then? Rudd asked.
Oh, funny man, or whatever. She reined in. So they bowed to you, Bottle said as he and the captain continued on. Why take it out on me?
I didn't. Never mind. To answer you, no, the adjunct knows nothing about me. But as you say, my precious anonymity is over. Or it is, assuming the moment when in camp you go running off to your sergeant.
I'm sure I will, Bottle replied. But not, if you like, to babble about you being an elder god.
God? Not a god, Bottle. I told you, it's not what you think.
I'll keep your ugly little secret, sir, if that's how you want it. But that won't change what we all saw that day, will it?
Storm Rider magic, yes, that.
That.
I borrowed it.
Borrowed?
Yes, he snapped in reply. I don't steal, Bottle.
Of course not, sir. Why would you need to?
Exactly.
Bottle nodded in the gloom, listening as Masan rode back up to them.
Borrowed.
A misunderstood people, the Storm Riders.
No doubt. Abject terror leaves little room for much else.
Interestingly, Ruthengard said in a murmur, needs have converged somewhat, and I'm too old to believe in coincidence. No matter. We do what we do, and that's that.
Sounds like something Fiddler would say.
Fiddler's a wise man, Bottle. He's also the best of you, though I doubt many would see that, at least not as clearly as I do.
Fiddler, is it? Not the adjunct, Captain?
He heard Ruthengard sigh, and it was a sound filled with sorrow.
I see pickets.
So do I, said Masangelani. Not Malazan. Perish.
Our allies, said Bottle, glaring at Ruthengard. But of course it was too dark for him to see that.
Then again, what's darkness to a hood-cursed, ice-wielding, imas-kneeling elder god?
Who then spoke?
It was a guess, Bottle, truly.
You took my anger.
The voice came out of the shadows. Blinking, Lostara Yil slowly sat up, the furs sliding down, the chill air sweeping around her bared breasts, back and belly. A figure was sitting on the tent's lone camp stool to her left, cloaked, hooded in grey wool. The two hands hanging down past the bend of his knees were pale as bone. Lostara's heart thudded hard in her chest.
I felt it, she said, rising like a flood.
She shivered, whispered,
and I drowned.
Your love summoned me, Lostara Yil.
She scowled.
I have no love for you, Cotillion.
The hooded head dipped slightly.
The man you chose to defend.
His tone startled her.
Weary, yes, but more than that, lonely. This god is lonely.